The following podcast is intended for mature audiences and may contain strong language, adult themes, and frank sexual content.
This is the Heart of Jack's podcast.
Barking dogs and garage doors, pursuing the bait-life balance, and a mindful talk about Tantra with Rick Laska. I'm Paul Rosenberg, and this is episode 14 of the Heart of Jack's podcast, brought to you by me and sponsored by the Woodhull Freedom Foundation, affirming sexual freedom as a fundamental human right. This show is also supported by people like you, patrons through Patreon. Find out more and add your support at patreon.com/theheartofjacks. I am still very new at this. No, that's not a preface for an apology. I received some very good advice recently that I should only apologize when it is necessary, when I actually screw something up that affects somebody else, rather than when I just don't meet my own standards. The latter kind of apology is really unnecessary, and actually kind of irritating, right? And I am still very new at this podcasting, interviewing thing. I'm learning, which is a big reason why I do it at all. Learning is challenging and satisfying and ultimately really fun for me. One thing I'm learning is that putting up an interview show every week, more or less, means always looking for more interviews. I guess I didn't pay attention to that part of the job description when I applied for the podcaster gig, but here I am doing all the things, including finding interesting guests who have a unique perspective on sex and sexuality. I'm fortunate that a lot of people are really into sex, so there doesn't seem to be an end to the supply. Also, my interest in the topic seems pretty bottomless, so this shouldn't be an unreasonable pursuit. Now, I have some return guests already slated, and I'm very much looking forward to hearing more from them. Some of my guests have come to me directly through the recommendations and referrals of you folks, my listeners. And Rick Laska, today's guest, is one of those folks, a recommendation from one of you. And I am super happy about it because it was a really great conversation. Even if there were a couple of audio issues and little dogs barking and garage doors opening right under the floor. And I'm fine with all of that. Not everyone I talk to has professional recording equipment set up in their home offices, and that's where most of my guests connect to me from, home. So here's what I'm getting at, as if you didn't know already. Do you, dear listener, have a connection with somebody who has an interesting take on sex and sexuality? There are tons of topics that I'm itching to chew on with the right people. Maybe that's you or somebody you know. So, to help spark your thinking on this, rather than just asking if you know any folks that I can talk sex with, I'm going to start sharing some of my unaddressed topics with you, and maybe one of them will turn on a light bulb in your head that sparks a flash of, hey, I know something about that, or I think my therapist works with this, or wow, that's exactly what Jane is writing her dissertation on. Here is just one juicy item on my topic list, something I've not yet discussed, but is ready to roll out with the right people. Adults who masturbate frequently, like a couple of times a week or every day, have other responsibilities like spouses, kids, jobs, housework, shopping, balancing checking accounts, making meals or music or podcasts or volunteering or caring for gardens and pets and just everything that goes with being a grown-up. If you have maintained a personal solo sex life, either as your exclusive sexual activity or as just one component of a broader sex practice that includes others, how do you find balance? I have in mind something that I call the bait-life balance. While I personally know men who proclaim that all they want to do is masturbate all day, I also know perfectly well that, as Dan Savage says about edging, that sounds great, but I've got shit to do. This is a topic that I would very much like to discuss, because I've not heard it talked about seriously, like ever, not once. What I've come to understand about grown-ups of all ages, from young adulthood to assisted living, those of us who are physically capable of enjoying the human sexual response process as it unfolds in our own bodies, very frequently have a masturbation component in their lives. Both men and women self-pleasure, and many of us who do, dare I say most of us, are finding ways to include it in our daily lives as a real source of self-love and self-care. I would like to do some shows on the phenomenon of how men and women successfully incorporate regular, high-quality self-pleasuring into their lives, and not just to keep the pipes working, but to feel good about ourselves as we are, to reduce stress, feel joy, and have a complete sense of our own sexuality as a good thing. This is some of the secret stuff that millions of healthy people keep locked up in their brains because it's just not talked about. But we all know what's going on, and like many of the topics we discuss here on the podcast, there is value on shedding light on the good stuff that we routinely hide. So, does that describe you? How does your bait-life balance work these days? Do you feel like you don't have time for self-love, or that self-love doesn't merit any of your time? What does the balance look like for you? How do you benefit? How does an imbalance impact your state of mind, your spirituality, your health? If you know something about this topic, or any of the topics that we've chewed on in the past, or if you know someone working in this area, either from a personal, practical, clinical, or academic angle, I would very much like to connect and talk. My email is podcast@theheartofjacks.com, or you can call and leave me a message at 206-580-3120, and I will get back to you. And thank you. Thank you sincerely in advance. My conversation with Rick Laska is next. My guest today is Rick Laska. Rick is a clinical social worker and certified sex therapist in the Twin Cities metro area in Minnesota. He has been involved in the field of sexual health and wellness for over two decades. He is passionate about pleasure, intimacy, and connection, as well as overcoming the oppressive forces trying to stifle those things. Rick Laska, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, I'm really happy to be here.
It's great to have you. When you graduated from high school, did you already know exactly what you wanted to be when you grew up? Like, I'm going to be a therapist.
Well, so first off, is it okay to swear?
Oh, totally.
Okay, all right. Fuck no. I had no idea. That was not anywhere on the map for me. I had done a lot of like career assessments and they always kind of said social work or occupational therapy or something along those lines. And I always rolled my eyes because I was going to be a classical musician.
Oh, yeah.
That was my destiny. That was where
What was your instrument?
I played the oboe.
Wow. So when you say played, does that mean you don't play it anymore?
I don't. No, it was a pretty emotional breakup with it. So I've had to like gauge and figure out, am I ready to do this? Am I not? And I mean, the oboe is no small undertaking. The amount of like muscle and breath control and things like that that go into playing it are pretty astounding. And when you go back to playing it after not having played it for a while, it is extremely humbling.
Wow. So do you still have it? Is it like in a closet somewhere?
Absolutely, I do. Yes, yes.
All right. So hope springs eternal, right?
Yes, yes. I think when things calm down a little bit for me in my professional life, I might start dabbling a little bit, but they're kind of at the peak right now. So I'm just keeping my eye on it from the distance.
So did you start out with a music major with a fine arts degree in mind?
Yes. So I was, the goal was to become an orchestral musician, and pretty quick into my college experience. So I'll be really forthcoming with you here.
Awesome.
Yeah. In my first year of my undergrad, actually was raped. So it just completely threw my whole scholastic life into havoc. And I just was struggling to kind of stay aligned. And about my third year and not really having gotten the support that I needed and like turning to like binge drinking and like spending a lot of time out and about with friends and trying to like find stability in these unstable places, I ended up shifting my major after doing a semester abroad because I just was like, this isn't going well. I came back, I got my BFA in French studies, and I had a music performance minor, and I went out into corporate America.
Where were you abroad? Were you in France?
No, I actually was in Ireland, but I met some people who were from France and they were really surprised at how much of my high school French I had retained. So I actually came back and said, hey, let's just blast through this and get a bachelor's and go from there.
Okay, so now we're on to plan B, right?
Yes, I worked in like coffee shops. I worked in restaurants. I got a job as a receptionist for an internet service provider. Got promoted to sales and marketing because I have social skills.
Were you speaking French at any of these jobs?
Not a one.
Okay. Another really useful degree.
Hey, I mean, I have used that French a lot more than I thought I would, especially in my 30s. So
awesome.
Yeah. So then I was doing kind of just meandering about, and then my best friend from undergrad, who was a fellow oboe player, she actually died tragically in a plane crash, and it just made me go, what in the world am I doing with my life? Like, I just lost someone who I love with all of my heart, and why in the world am I just like taking life for granted like this? Like, I gotta figure something out. So I applied for a job with an aid service organization because I was like, hey, I got really passionate and excited volunteering for them, and they had a position. It was really entry level. And when I got there, I was like, oh, okay, this is what I'm supposed to be doing. Because it was this great combination of doing like public health education around sexuality for the community in general, but specifically like the queer community. There was a lot more education there. But then also there was a social service component to it, where I was helping connect people to services and get enrolled in programs to help them really start to thrive during difficult times. So that's, I got there, and from there it just naturally became, hey, I like talking about sex and pleasure and safer sex and, you know, connecting with people. And I also really like the social emotional support role that this is. And it just made me want to advance into what I am now.
I'm curious about recovery from the rape. From surviving the rape.
Yeah.
Where did you feel like you began to heal from that or move on from that? Or is this an ongoing process?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's tricky. So like, I think the trauma response to it, I've done some really good work with and recovered and really integrated, like, hey, this has happened to me, but it's not something that's easy to accept as part of your life. You know, like it's there. And I go like, hey, this happened. It sucked, but it doesn't have to control me now. So like, and there are still times where my body will reflexively act, like during times of intimacy or connection, during sex, hookups, goodness knows what. But it'll have the reflex of like kind of constricting and pulling away. And right. The other thing about trauma is that like shutdown, there's a shutdown that can occur. So like I have to, honestly, oftentimes I have to like challenge those things when they emerge. But it's the reflex is the right thing, because it was about like keeping me safe during what had happened.
Right.
Really, it's just reminding my body, my nervous system that, hey, I'm in the present and this is a safe experience. And thank you for having the reflex. But, you know, so it's going to be there. And I think it's probably going to be there for a good amount of time. There's some like maybe some somatic work that I might want to do in the future. But as far as like the emotional part and the trauma response, that I've done a lot of great work with and feeling pretty comfortable, which is why I can talk about this is in the ways that I can.
Yeah. Yeah. So on the ASECT website, ASECT is the American Association of Sexuality Educators, Counselors, and Therapists. You've got a statement of philosophy there, and it says, regardless of what you are struggling with, my hope is to honor your humanity, see you for who you are, not just your struggles, and help you discover your own definition of sexual and mental health. And when I read that, my first question was, what the fuck is mental health? Really? I mean, we think we know what it is, but we think of it in terms of the absence of mental illness, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
So What is mental health in your estimation?
Yeah, I mean, that is a big question, right?
Right. Yeah.
Because when you kind of even take a step further back, like what is health? You know, it's so, there's so many parts to it. There are the parts that we have to actively do to take care of it. There are the parts that we have that are about the absence of illness or malady. You know, there's active and passive components to health, I think. And, The tricky part about mental health is that, yes, we can have these organic things that are happening inside of us, but the world happens around us too.
Right.
You know, and one of the reasons I chose social work is because the field really recognizes that the environment is such a huge impact on the person. It's not just when people show up in circumstances where they're labeled as mentally ill or have a mental health diagnosis. Some folks can kind of forget that they're coming from environments that are extremely dangerous, are oppressive, are violent, and that all those things are going to lead to really normal human, like the nervous system responses that kind of manifest in these ways that can be problematic to life for people who aren't in those environments. So, sure. You know, someone who grew up in a war zone, they're going to have a very different nervous system set up and responses than someone who grew up in, you know, like meditation, yoga, retreat world. You know, there's just the nervous systems are, we're trained very differently. And to the person who's in the like meditation, yoga world, they're going to look at the person who grew up in the war zone and say, oh, that person's sick. But that's not the case. Like that person actually was really healthy and adaptive in that environment. So really what I try to do when I think about mental health is think about how can we give you choices of ways to respond that aren't automatic and exclusively based on what has happened to you, that we can have new experiences all the time that allow us to experience the world in new ways. And there are some ways that tend to, like the body has a really natural process of moving through emotions. And when we do that without it being suppressed for whatever reason, we're able to actually function in these really optimal ways and make sense of the world and not make overgeneralizations. So that's really what I try to do with people who come to me who are maybe needing assistance with their mental health.
Yeah, it just seems that the idea of this person is mentally healthy and this person is not are very subjective, and they depend a lot about the person making that assessment.
Yes, yes. I think it would be ill-suited. You would not be a good clinician if you weren't taking into account the places people were coming from. And also making the assumption that somehow you know better than they do about how they should be responding to the world.
Right, right. So same question about sexual health, because like mental health, we think of sexual health as the absence of a disease, like a sexually transmitted infection, that we don't think beyond what does it mean to be healthy sexually, right?
When I think about sexual health, like illness infection is one component, but there's also, and yeah. What a lot of states tend to do is they look at infection prevention and pregnancy management.
Yeah,
those tend to be the two things that organizations can get funded to do. But there's this like amazing journey that goes into the development of someone sexually. Everything from just like the experience of desire inside of the body and appreciating that to the expression of that desire and how our body then responds through like hormones and blood flow and things like that. The experience of pleasure, connection, intimacy, how our bodies develop and change and grow throughout life. It's not just, you know, puberty and then all of a sudden your body's the way it's supposed to be the rest of its life, right? Like there's this whole spectrum of experiences that go into being sexual beings in the world. And they get expressed in so many ways. I just am always in awe and humbled by.
Yeah, that description of how policy can view sexual health as just how you manage pregnancy, whether you're pregnant or not, and how you manage sexually transmitted infections, that's super limiting. And that seems to also apply to sex education.
Yes.
That sex.
I'm enthusiastically agreeing. Sorry.
Yeah. I've looked to find who is doing really comprehensive sex education that includes pleasure, that includes sexual joy, that includes happiness around sex, not just, you avoid pregnancy or you get pregnant, or this is how pregnancy works, and this is how you keep from getting a disease, right?
Yeah. And what that leads to is people getting stuck on outcomes as the measure of whether or not I'm healthy.
Right.
That's where it's like, am I having sex enough? Am I having sex for long enough? Am I being, quote unquote, safe or unsafe? Am I a slut? Am I a whore? Am I, am I a virgin? Am I, am I an aggressor? Am I someone who's chaste? Am I a prude? It all gets really stuck on these like outcome labels. And that bums me out. It bums me out a bunch.
Freedom of sexual expression between consenting adults is a fundamental human right, and that's the work of Woodhull Freedom Foundation. Woodhull is the only national organization working at the intersection of sexual and human rights. 2021 will be their most impactful year yet, with an upcoming lobby and advocacy day, the 2021 Virtual Sexual Freedom Summit, and the ongoing battle challenging FOSTA in their lawsuit against the United States. Learn more and join the fight at WoodhullFoundation.org. That's WoodhullFoundation.org. The Woodhull Freedom Foundation, affirming sexual freedom as a fundamental human right.
People come to me, they're caught up in like numbers and labels. That's what they're focused on. And they don't like me at first when I say things like, well, what do you mean by normal? What do you mean by, are we having sex enough or not enough? What does that mean to you? Because we have this idea that there's some formula, some specific measure or something that's going to tell us that we're doing it right and that we're happy. I have sex this many times a week, and that means I have a good relationship. I have this many orgasms with my partner, and that means I am sexually happy. And it really closes off the world of possibilities that come with pleasure and curiosity and exploration.
Very externally focused.
Yes. Yes.
So interesting. It seems like that kind of expression of struggle is a way of distracting from what's really going on.
Yes. Well, if I'm caught up on where it's going and if it's enough, guess where I'm not? In the present. Having the actual sex, with the person, whether it be myself or with someone else, I'm thinking about where we're going, not where we are.
You know, this brings me to another part of your ASECT profile where you mentioned that you list your areas of specialization. And two of those things that stood out to me were mindful sex and tantric sex. So mindful sex, it occurs to me that the best sex that I have is the most present in the moment sex. And I'm curious where your focus on mindfulness came from.
I think it came out of just my learning in my graduate program and postgraduate program. Being present and in the moment was a pretty shocking idea for me. So much of my life had been focused on, achieving certain goals, reaching certain outcomes, getting to certain points, about reaching certain outcomes. And when I got some training around the use of mindfulness and I began to use Headspace, it's an app on my that you can get in the app store. Started practicing some mindfulness. It really seemed right to me, just being in the moment. And as someone who was in the process of becoming a sex therapist, my mind immediately jumped to how does this fit into sexuality? Because what I've noticed about a lot of people who were coming to me at that point is that there's just a lot of performance anxiety. There was a lot of disconnection, and that begets dysfunction.
Right.
For people with penises and testicles, the nervous system. Erections are parasympathetic nervous system response, meaning it needs to be relaxed. And that's why people who have penises will have erections in the morning, because that's when our bodies are extremely relaxed. For people with vulvas, vaginas, and ovaries, actually, there can be like a little bit of nervous system, like a sympathetic response, a mild activation, but not enough to feel like a threat. That can help get the juices going a little bit more.
Sure.
But there still needs to be enough present moment connection to have kind of optimally functioning bodies that really engages the full sensory experience that is sex and intimacy.
I often feel well served by meditation practice when I'm having sex with somebody, just because I'm used to recognizing when my mind has gone somewhere else and bringing it back to now. And just doing that over and over and over and coming back. Luckily, sex provides me with a pretty good focus.
Yes. Yeah. You know, it really is. But, you know, I've been with partners who, like, their erections will go away, and I've also had mine go away. And what always helps is to stop and breathe and just touch and look at each other and kiss and just take the pressure off. And then all of a sudden, everything seems to just go back to working. When I say working, I don't necessarily mean like the body starts doing things that we associate with like youth and rigorous sex, but like we open ourselves up to a richer experience that isn't just centered around penetrative sex.
Well, you're preaching to the choir when it comes to something other than penetrative sex. I did.
Penetration is lovely. Penetration is lovely. So, you know, I don't want to knock it, but there's so much.
Seriously.
There's so much more to the experience than just that moment.
Well, I know that's one thing that reminds me of in my own experience was, as I got older, I found it more difficult to ejaculate, that there would be times when I was having sex with my husband or with anybody, and I just wouldn't come. And I would get into this place of like really focusing hard on I've got to achieve this. It's like trying to fall asleep. You know, it's like you're filled with this distracting energy that pulls you farther and farther away from the goal. And it wasn't until I completely gave up on the goal of ejaculation that suddenly I was able to ejaculate again. And it was no longer a big deal. Either I did or I didn't. And it was more about having a good time and enjoying the time that I was with my partner.
So much of my work is helping people get to that point. It is hard to let go of these ideas of what we are supposed to do, what the world tells us how our body should be working and what a measure of success is, and which are all great ways to kind of suggest someone might be having a satisfying sex life, but it's not a guarantee. There are plenty of people that I've worked with who have the 3 to 5 sexual encounters with their partners a week, and they're unhappy. You know, it is not an indicator of connection during sex.
You know, the idea of doing things the way they're supposed to be, or wanting to be normal. I listen to Dan Savage a lot. I read his columns. And in so many of the calls and letters that he gets, they end with the question, am I normal? And he always kind of goes off on that. And, you know, I understand why people want to feel like they're part of society in general, that they belong. But we do seem to get really hung up on this idea of being normal.
Well, this is a big question for me, so excuse me if
I... Well, here's a question. When somebody says, am I normal, what are they really asking?
Am I alone?
There we go.
And we as people rely on connection. There have been so many times in our history where we have needed to be isolated from one another. And it's maddening to humans. One of the things that I learned in school was there's some orphanages in Romania where the staff at the orphanage, they didn't want the children to attach to the staff because they thought the disruption to that connection when they were sent off to a new family would cause a lot of harm. So the staff were instructed to just simply change the kids, feed them, No affection, no playing, no nothing, just bare essentials. And
wow,
what happened is these kids got sick. They were all underweight. They had just heartbreaking spirits. And a number of them died from that kind of deprivation.
Failure to thrive.
Yeah, exactly. We rely on other people. We need them. And if something gets in the way of being able to be connected safely to people, which are things that we think make us different or unacceptable or something that would eject us from our connections from one another, it terrifies us. And people want to be normal so they can stay connected to those around them. This place where the messages that we receive of what is within the standard deviation, you know, when normal goes against who we are, and is that going to then interfere with our ability to connect with people? People who want to know if they're normal are usually pretty afraid that they are going to end up alone because there's something freakish and broken about them.
Right. Well, that explains a lot of why so many young gay people hide being gay.
Yes, because they're going to be abnormal. Yeah. They're going to be ejected. And I mean, realistically, the numbers show that they are, you know, like the queer folks in general. I mean, the trans community even more so, but like the LGBT, anyone who kind of falls under the umbrella, we are at legitimate risk of being ejected. And we can only hope that if someone is, that they find others who work to keep them safe.
Yeah, I think we largely know about the percentages of homeless youth who are actually discarded by their families.
Yeah. And it's about a third of homeless youth are queer identified.
It's just amazing.
Yeah, when you look at the general population of queer folks around the world, it's anywhere from like 5 to 7% nationally, like, is what they estimate. So to have a third of homeless youth be represented by queer folks, that's pretty astounding. And in my mind, a huge societal betrayal.
Patreon is a membership platform that makes it easy for artists and creators to get paid. Like Kickstarter and GoFundMe, Patreon enables you to pledge money to support a large project that you like. But unlike other crowdfunding platforms, Patreon support is ongoing. Patrons make small, regular contributions so that creators can have sustained support. It's especially helpful for small and new ventures like the Heart of Jax project that haven't yet reached the scale necessary to generate ad revenue. Now, as you may have noticed, this show does have sponsors, but here's a little secret. I'm giving those ads away. Patreon is currently the sole source of revenue for the Heart of Jax. Because this podcast is entirely underwritten by you, my audience, I get to run free ads for nonprofits that match my own values and carefully choose just who I support. Nonprofits like the Seattle Erotic Art Festival, the Pan Eros Foundation, the Woodhull Freedom Foundation, and the Consent Academy. In my own way, I'm contributing to them by sharing their messages with you while simultaneously matching my ad content to my programming. I would love to keep doing this, to continue amplifying voices that raise awareness of sex positivity. As long as I have your support, I can support them in turn. Go to patreon.com/theheartofjax to find out how you can sustain this show while also amplifying sex positive voices advocating for your own sexual freedom and joy. That's patreon.com/theheartofjax to add your support. And a big thanks to my patrons for funding this week's show. So I would be remiss if I didn't circle back to tantric sex. you mentioned tantric sex, which is of course, very hot. Yeah. A lot of people like talking about tantric sex and talking about it as if they know what they're talking about. So I'm curious, what, first of all, what is tantric sex? What do you mean by tantric sex?
So it's there's a handful of ways I could go with this, but I honestly,
let's go with your definition.
Yeah, honestly, it's really just like intentional mindful sex where the goal of orgasm is taken away. You know, and we can have penetration, but oftentimes that isn't necessarily a part of tantric sex. It's really about having these euphoric, ecstatic completely embodied and also outside of, like, being so embodied that it expands outside of the body, where there's almost, for some people, they'll call it like a spiritual experience. And in that, there's been some like ritualized practices around Tantra. And if you go to like a lot of educational places, you'll see some like ritualized components that I think are super, super, can be super helpful for some people. Other people are like, this is a little too hippie woo woo for me. I don't want that. You know, if you're not into the hippie woo woo stuff, I would say Urban Tantra is a great book for you. It's a really grounded, down to earth way to kind of talk about Tantra. And to like see if you want to dip into the more kind of ritualized components, but the embodied part and the awareness of, you know, from the tips of your fingers to the bottoms of your toes to the top of your head, there's the potential for pleasure to come from those places.
Does Tantra come out of Hinduism?
I believe that's where it comes from. Okay.
It's curious because I practice a form of meditation, which is basically secularized Tibetan Buddhism, and it's completely secularized. They take all the woo-woo out so that it's just the practice. And that worked for me.
Yeah. No, and I mean, really, like, Tantra really emerged in, like, oppressive Southern Asian culture, like, specifically out of India, I believe. And it was rebellion to this, like, extremely conservative agenda that was placed on the nation. And people were rebelling by engaging in tantric practices. So it was a form of protest and also a way of being more connected to the body when people were being told not to.
That's cool. I didn't know that.
It is. That's where a lot of the ritualized things, and that's why you see a lot of it coming from a lot of the like manuals and teachers and even like some of the art and sculptures and things like that. Really a lot of them were in India because people were trying to set up spaces to do this and to organize.
So how does tantric sex fit into a clinical setting?
For people who are into Tantra, they'll let me know and they'll let me know real fast. For people who don't, I tend to start from a place of mindfulness and build up to an awareness of being able to think of the whole body as a potential source of pleasure and delight.
That sounds like a journey.
Yeah, it can be. It's other people, you know, once you get past some of the initial barriers, you'd be surprised how fast, like once a piece of it clicks, a lot of the other dominoes start to topple. You're like, oh, you know, all the beautiful neural networks that help us connect to intellectual ideas when we actually experience them.
Yes.
That can happen pretty quick sometimes.
You know, I've heard of tantric sex referred to for many years as a form of cum control for men, often in context of a way of treating premature ejaculation.
It absolutely can be that. And the reason is because you're starting to pay attention to all of the subtleties of your body, like what actually makes up the experience of an orgasm, where it starts, where it's coming from. Because a lot of people, they just kind of tend to like white out with the pleasure explosion. They're like, ah! You know, they have their moment of like, oh, this is lovely. They're not aware of all of the subtle things that are happening inside of the body. And tantric practices or being mindful, right, about what is going on can help you control, you know, whether or not you ejaculate or if you want to have an orgasm and not ejaculate. You know, there are plenty of books about the multi-orgasmic man out there. It's a great practice to help you just put some intentional focus into what is happening in your genitals, in addition to how the rest of your body's responding to the pleasure that can come out of that space.
To what degree is this practiced as a part of masturbation?
I hope people are doing it with masturbation as well. It's a great way to get familiar with how your body can do this with someone else.
I assure you there are lots of people doing this with masturbation.
Well, I mean, I do know that, but I want to invite people to practice and just kind of become aware of, hey, what is happening in my genitals and in the rest of my body when I orgasm? Do I hold my breath? What muscles are tense? And what would happen if I did something different than what the reflex is calling for?
It's right.
Pretty cool.
Right. So two questions that come up are, first, are there any resources you would recommend for looking into that historical resource, investigating what happened in India and the whole revolution of tantric sex? Because you like dangled that out there and it was like, oh, people are going to want to know where to go.
Yes. Bruce Anderson wrote a book, Tantra for Gay Men.
Oh,
and,
cool.
He goes into some of that history. I mentioned earlier Barbara Kurelis's Urban Tantra, Sacred Sex for the 21st Century, another great resource for learning about how to engage in some of the practices, maybe with some of the spiritual component. Bruce really integrated a lot of the spiritual components into his book. So to have those things, I was reading those two things simultaneously, and it really helped me kind of ground like, hey, what of this fits for me and what of it doesn't. So those, I think, can be really great resources for folks.
That's awesome. Thank you so much for that. So Rick Laska, who inspires you?
I mean, there's so many people. But I'm going to do like my therapy shout out first. Diana Fuscia, who originated Accelerated Experiential Dynamic Psychotherapy, she really helped me find how I wanted to do this work. And she has been and continues to be someone that I just really look forward to reading, engaging with, and she's just fantastic. Another amazing therapist who does work specifically with the erotic and intimacy is Esther Perel. And
oh God, yes.
I
love her.
Yeah. Her two podcasts are pretty great resources for people, but in particular, what sold me on Esther before I ever saw her speak to a live group was her TED Talk, Rethinking Infidelity. Because she looks at how infidelity has really mutated and shifted as the world and what the expectations of relationships are have changed, and how different important moments in our history, everything from the development of agriculture to the Industrial Revolution to modern day times, how the idea of what is and is not allowed and appropriate in a relationship shifts and bends depending on what's happening in the culture at large. But that TED Talk is a great 20 minutes to spend on in your life. I would definitely recommend it for people who haven't heard it before.
I have to second that emotion. I fell in love with Esther Perel from that TED Talk, TED Talk. She's just so smart and appealing and funny and so sharp. I think she's just one of those superheroes. So thank you for that.
And I think this shouldn't come as a shock, but the tantric community and the queer movement, leaders from that, it takes a lot of courage to be different. It takes a lot of courage to be different. It takes a lot of courage to go for what you want in life and to be who you are. And to be that person who gets fed up and sets a hard boundary with our culture, that is inspiring. That is like, hey, this isn't okay. This isn't allowed. You don't get to treat me in this way. Hey, you don't get to tell me that I don't have a right to pleasure and connection. That inspires me. People who stand up for themselves and for others in the process. I'll leave it at that because I'll blab on for too long if I go on.
So you've already recommended a couple of books, which I'm going to list. Is there anything else in terms of media or something that you're really into right now that you'd like to share?
The book It's Not Always Depression by Hilary Hendel is a great way to think about mental health for people. And it really kind of resonates with what I was saying before. She does a great job of talking about general experiences with emotion rather than, I tend to focus a bit more on desire and the pursuit of pleasure, where Hilary backs it up and looks at an array of emotions and helps us kind of conceptualize how we treat ourselves when we're having different emotions. So that I think is a great book. I really liked Sex Education on Netflix.
Oh, yeah.
That's a fun little show that I would definitely say give a watch as well.
You are not the first guest that I've had that's recommended that show.
And I mean, Agent Scully, come on.
Right? Well, Rick, it has been a real pleasure to have you on the podcast.
Thank you. I'm so happy I got to be here. Thank you.
Yeah.
I want to thank Rick Laska for joining me on the podcast today. Links to everything we discussed are in the show notes. Do you have thoughts on today's show? Have you got experience with tantric sex or mindfulness practice of your own to share? Or do you know the perfect guest for me to discuss bait life balance with? Send me all your feedback at podcast@theheartofjacks.com or call 206-580-3120. The Heart of Jacks podcast, written and produced by me, and sponsored by the Woodhull Freedom Foundation, affirming sexual freedom as a fundamental human right at woodhullfoundation.org. This show is also made possible by people like you, patrons through Patreon. Go to patreon.com/theheartofjacks to learn more and add your support. Theme music is Carousellophane by Jake Bradford Sharp. Podcast distribution by Simplecast at simplecast.com. Until next time, that is the Heart of Jacks podcast. I'm Paul Rosenberg.